we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatments of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, June the 9th, 2017. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio by my animal-loving vegan co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
And our three animal rights activist guests, former undercover investigator with Mercy for Animals, Jeff Vergeer.
Hey.
Vegan triathlete and animal rights activist Dominic Thompson.
Hola.
So this morning, you all came from a really exciting event. Let's talk about what you did this morning.
Can we switch mics with Megan? Your mic is really whacked out.
Oh, that was real.
Yeah, okay. There we go.
That was real. Okay. Hi, this is my voice. We started off the weekend for the animals this morning with the Vancouver Chicken Save 4-hour chicken vigil. And we had a really great group of people, including Dom and a bunch of other amazing activists, come out. And there were 4 cops there, 6 security guards, all sorts of extra management in the back. And there was a bit of shoving and pushing. Jeff, you were in on that a little bit.
Another shoving and pushing incident at the Hallmark Chicken Slaughterhouse?
Yeah. It was me.
Let's hear it. What happened?
What happened to me?
Yeah.
I was exercising my charter protected right to express my opposition to what we do to chickens and peacefully and lawfully protesting, and the slaughterhouse employees decided to use empty crates and push protesters out of the way who were documenting what was going on with cameras and whatnot. And in addition to that, slaughterhouse personnel were grabbing and shoulder checking, pushing me up against the wall, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you're all nonviolent. I mean, I do activism with you, and we have a very strict nonviolence policy. So it was definitely uncalled for, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a very peaceful protest, and there was no physical aggression by myself or any of the other protesters there. It was definitely a one-way street.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit more about what happens at the Hallmark Chicken Slaughterhouse, which is right in this neighborhood. It's Commercial and Hastings, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and if Megan, if you want to speak, if you could not move the mic, that just go up to the mic and share it. Yeah,
thanks. Can you guys just put that right in the middle, and then we don't have to keep moving it? Great.
Yeah.
Hi. So what happens in the vigils every week?
The vigils, and also let the public know what exactly happens for those chickens that are going through the slaughterhouse. Maybe they don't know.
Oh, okay. Yes, absolutely. So the chickens are brought in trucks, in crates, and they're stored in this giant warehouse. And
they're crammed in those crates, aren't they?
Yes. They're very squished and very ill, and they've been traveling for hours and hours. And the warehouses are like stacked full, 4 high of these crates, like super high up, and they're just waiting and waiting and waiting. And then forklifts take the crates one by one across the alley to where the slaughterhouse is. It's all very noisy and clangy, and
it's really frightening. I've been there. It's very noisy.
Yes. And as well, being there, like, we post pictures and footage and all of that, but being there in person, it's a real visceral experience because you hear all the sounds and you're right there, as well as the smells. It's especially getting into summer, it's pretty gross, and mm-hmm. but it's the smell of death. Mm-hmm. And as well, you hear the birds crying, you see the feathers flying through the air. Mm-hmm. it's incredibly it just makes you feel powerless But like all we can do is bear witness to them and spread this message that this is not okay.
And I've been there and I've looked in the birds' eyes and I've heard their chirps. And I think all they've ever known in their whole life is fear and uncertainty and domination. And, and here's how it ends. And in all weather conditions, they're brought in on these trucks with these open crates.
Yeah.
You know, in the hot summer days, they're left out there crammed together. And on the freezing cold days, same thing. And I know also that their feet often get caught in the in the little slats and they come off when they're being emptied out. Right.
There was a Mercy for Animals undercover investigation that we spoke about on the show earlier this year when I did an interview about the conditions for animals in transport slaughterhouses. And I encourage people to go to our website, animalvoices.org, and look up chickens, and it's from January, I believe.
I think Jeff has something to say about that.
Okay.
I'm not sure which investigation you're referring to.
It was in Ontario.
At Maple Lodge Farms?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I might know a little bit about that.
Well, chickens were being transported, many frozen like hockey pucks already because of the terrible conditions in Ontario in the winter, right? And there's no regulation for temperatures in the trucks. There's no regard for whatsoever for chickens. And then the way that they're being handled in the actual slaughterhouse itself, they're being crushed in those crates. There's no regard for their comfort whatsoever. They're going to be slaughtered.
Jeff, do you have anything to add to that?
One of the main issues surrounding that is the fact that the penalties, it makes business sense for the slaughterhouse to truck in chickens during the coldest weather conditions, because if they don't truck them in, they would lose more money than the penalties that they are given. So there isn't proper incentive for them to put the chickens' lives and their suffering first, because if they were to do that, the current fines that they receive when they do receive them are not sufficient to, they would lose more money by just stopping the operation altogether. So they make more money if they just pay the fines and do it anyways.
So really this show today, everybody, is about getting the people who are listening, who are not yet vegan, to think a little more about the things that we tend not to think about so much. And I myself was this way until 3 years ago when I allowed my eyes to be open to the things that I didn't want to see. And I watched the Earthlings documentary, and that really solidified my commitment to going vegan. But at that time, I was buying humane products, or so I thought. And I now know that there's no such thing as humane animal products, but I was spending the extra money at Whole Foods, and I was thinking that the animals' bodies that I was purchasing were actually slaughtered in a totally different slaughterhouse, that it was done in such a way that they didn't know it was coming. I thought that they had free lives roaming around on grassy fields, and that their life was very peaceful. And now I know it's not even necessary to eat animal products. And I wish I'd known all that sooner, but we've kind of been brainwashed a little bit. So this is what our show is about today. And now I'd like to begin my interview with Dominic. So Dominic is a vegan triathlete from New York. And Dom, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you guys inviting me up here. Thank you so much.
Well, I had you on the show strategically because I work in healthcare as a massage therapist, and a lot of my clients are athletes, and they think that they need protein from animal products. And you, it's too bad this is radio and people can't see your muscles, but they can go to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and check out the pictures.
We're going to take a group photo after the show. So
he's a ball of muscle,
Facebook.
Just so everybody knows what we're
doing. Have you ever been called the ball of muscle before? Yeah,
the ball of muscle. No, I've been called a lot of things, but not the ball of muscle.
And so Jen knows her muscles.
Yeah, so. I do.
I'm sure she does. She's been around a lot. So
why don't you tell us your story? You've been 10 years vegan, 10 years vegetarian, 6 years vegan. How did that happen for you?
Yeah, you know, it's been about 16 years. I, as a kid, I actually made that connection. I was like one of those prodigy type of childs, where just my thinking was very advanced. And as a kid, when my mom was serving me like chicken wings, I felt like I was eating little bitty arms, you know, and that's just being honest. I used to fight back and forth with her about it, and she got smart and just started serving me fish sticks and chicken breasts, because I felt like if I just seen just white meat, I was okay, and that was fine for a while. But I always had a compassion in me. I would break up dog fights growing up. I would fight with kids and friends that would torture stray animals and stuff like that. So, you know, I always had that compassion in me. And fast forward, you know, I know we're kind of kind of pressed for time, but just a little bit about me. Former gang member, former guy from the streets of Chicago. Any of you guys know anything about Chicago? Right now it's being called Chi-Rac, and that's for a reason. It's a very violent city, and cliche stuff that you'll see in the movie, but grew up in a single-parent home, no father around, and I end up, getting caught up in the streets. Used to be involved in a lot of street activity to a high level, and that caught up to me to the fact that I had to go do time, and I went away for prison, and in prison, I end up finding myself. That first week in prison, I just made the, I declared and put everything together that everything that was happening to me as far as this scenario that I put myself into was the universe trying to tell me something. I need to get back to the basics, get back to what I discovered as a kid, and that was not destroying or being part of anything that was destroying life. And whether that's called, whether that was me pumping drugs into the community or me really contributing to an industry that's destroying animals, I felt like I just couldn't be a part of that. So I went just pretty much in prison plant-based. Yep.
And did they have options for you to be
plant-based? No, they didn't have options. Look, when I say I went to prison, I'm not talking about some county. I'm not talking about some months. I did calendars. I did some years. And I ate a lot of oatmeal, a lot of beans and rice, a lot of oatmeal, too much oatmeal. To this day, I'm not a fan of oatmeal. And I'm just being honest with you, a lot of oatmeal and peanut butter and bananas. And when they did serve like dairy and stuff like that, I did. Cause at that time we didn't have what these kids have today, this information, this, incredible format and platform called social media. We just didn't have that in those days in the times I grew up. So I didn't know about the dairy industry. And, you know, even though I went vegetarian or plant-based for animal reasons, I didn't make that connection until later on, until I became vegan, and then I started seeing more information about that. So yeah, just a lot of beans and rice.
Yeah, and nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that at all. And that's why I chuckle a lot when guys see me and they be like, "This guy takes supplements, or he might have took drugs and stuff like that." If I didn't do it in prison, I'll have to do it in real life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Awesome. And what, you're an athlete. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, typically I do about 10 to 12 endurance races per year. That includes triathlons, marathons, all types of high endurance sports. As a endurance, especially multi-sport, with respect to triathlon, is something that no matter who you are, you can be a guy like me, somebody like Rich Roll or anybody, that you just can't master that sport. You know what I mean? No one goes out and say, "Let's play triathlon." You know what I mean? So it's always a constant challenging discipline, multi-discipline activity that I just fell in love with and I can never really conquer. I can go in the weight room and you guys probably see me smashing weights online and stuff. I definitely am a very strong guy, very strong vegan. And but that's easy to me, you know, because my background is football, powerlifting and all of that good stuff. But triathlons, biking, swimming and running, it's always a challenge, you know, it's always a challenge, and it feels good just to see and push your body to levels that you have never seen before. And I owe that all to the plant-based diet for sure.
Mm-hmm. And you don't even have a typical triathlete's body.
I don't.
You're mesomorphic.
I actually don't. But keep in mind, you're looking at me now. I'm not in triathlon mode. Mm-hmm. In triathlon mode, I'd be 10 pounds lighter. You know what I mean? I'd be like 10 pounds lighter. This year, because I'm transitioning out of corporate America, this is my last month out of that position. And I have a healthcare background, too. I've been an executive in healthcare for close to 15 years since I post that era that I spoke to you guys about earlier. I am transitioning into a new phase in my life where I'm full-on activist full-time. So during this transitional period, I had to take off from the high endurance training per mm-hmm. se and stuff like that. Not to say that I took off from training. I don't. I still train insane, but I just I don't have any. I'm not in that high volume part of my training at this point, at this specific moment, and that won't kick back in until August.
Dom, can I ask quickly, like, what is your height and weight? Like, what are your stats? Just people can get a picture.
You want my physical attributes?
It's radio. So people want to paint a picture in their head.
I'm 6'11 and 500 pounds. No, okay. I'm about 6 feet. Right now, you're looking at a solid 200 of muscle. Yeah, 200 pounds.
Solid 200.
Yeah.
Body fat?
I don't know that. I'm not a physique competitor. I don't measure myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not into myself like that, where I can give you my body fat percentages. And I don't even do macros. I don't even count. I have an idea of what goes in my body in terms of daily, but that's just not my thing. I'm too old for that. I'm too advanced for that. I just eat
to
live.
That's cool to know.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, what changes have you noticed in your body and performance since going vegan?
So many changes. It's just an amazing transformation. So when I was on an omnivore diet, mainly eating meat, I weighed close to 250 pounds. And I got all the way down to, in triathlon phase, the lowest I've been is like 187, about 187, 185. But in terms of the physical transformation, my recovery time is insane. I can train 2 to 3 times a day, even if I wanted to do the same muscle group. Okay, so per se, let's say if we just do chest and legs today, I can do that 3 times throughout the day. I can do it in the morning. I can do it in the afternoon. I can do it in the evening as well, without having any performance issues at a high level, at the same amount that I did earlier that day. And that goes along. That's why I guess me picking up triathlons was kind of like it went hand in hand, because you know you're doing multi disciplines throughout the day. You're training throughout the week. And the same thing when you focus on specific body parts. So my recovery is insane. I don't have inflammation happening. I'm able to, and don't let the size fool you. I could do sub-7 miles. You know, I'm a fast dude for my size. Don't let that fool you. I'm very powerful on a bike. And like I said, it's just amazing, especially because I'm when I go into primary raw phase, like because I am primary raw, especially doing my triathlon mode. So I consume mainly raw blended fruits or juice. Fruits per se, more fruitarian than vegetables. I do some vegetables, but fruit is my stuff. That's my secret sauce. Choose watermelons, mangoes, peaches, pineapples, tons of bananas. That's my thing. Yeah.
And you were mentioning earlier you don't use any protein powder.
I don't use any protein powder. For legitimate reasons, with the environment being so toxic these days, and most of these companies source their powders from areas of the world where farmers have bad soil from different waste that's happening out there, and with Fukushima happened, a lot of those companies are getting it from Asia. There's metals in there, harmful metals, and I, if I'm not the formulator itself, I just can't trust. I have to be the farmer itself, and I'm not trying to demonize supplements or anything like that, but if I'm not in the lab or I don't have a connection directly with the lab, I have no desire to put in my body. And my body is thriving pretty well just eating fruits as it is. So mm-hmm. It's just not my thing, protein powders.
Well, you're definitely living proof that we don't need that kind of thing.
But again, I don't want to demonize it, because I think, especially from when you're coming from an omnivore diet, just like with mock meats, okay, some of those guys and girls need that for their transition. Mm-hmm. Listen, if you want a piece of chicken from soy and it tastes like chicken, if that's going to help you stop killing animals, that's what I'm about. You know, right. If you want to be a shitty comfort food eating vegan, as long as you're not killing any animals, I don't care.
I agree.
You know what I mean? So, I don't want to demonize that industry like that.
Well, can you give us a rough idea of what kinds of meals you eat?
So it depends. I basically like I roll over and like a pre-workout drink for me, and you guys, I'm telling you, this is the best pre-workout drink, especially when you're going to do like a high volume of cardiovascular activity, is juice, beets, and watermelon. The combination of that and strawberries too, the antioxidants and all of that, it's amazing. It really opens up your lungs. It really helps with your recovery while you're running. You can just really push it to the next level. So that's like a pre-workout drink. And keep in mind, throughout the day, I'm a working professional, so I'm fueling throughout the day. I do most of my prepping on Sundays and Wednesday, so I'm consuming anywhere between 8 to 12 ounces of blended fruits or juice fruits every 1 to 2 hours. So I'm already hydrated. I'm already ready to go. I'm fueled up. And that's why I'm able to train on my lunch hours and stuff like that. I don't fraternize on lunch hours. I don't go out here and have meals with coworkers. No, I train because I've been fueling throughout the day. So that's how I'm able to train in the morning during my lunch hour, and also when I get home in the evening after work and stuff like that, because I'm fueling throughout the day.
Do you know about how many calories you take in per day?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably about, I want to say at least anywhere between 2 to 3K. You know, sometimes I can tell you protein specifically, I get about 100 or less. There are days I only get 50 grams of protein, you know.
And you're a muscle man.
And I'm a muscle man. So that just goes to show you that marketers are just trying to really push protein down your throat. They just want you to buy.
That's true.
You know.
Well, we've talked a lot about your athletic background. You were a power lifter. You did CrossFit, cross training. What is your current training program and race schedule like?
Yeah. So, again, I'm going through a transition phase. For those of you that don't know me, it's pretty, you know, and a lot of you guys do follow me online, know that. By day, I am a healthcare executive. I have been over the years, and I am transitioning and resigning from that industry. I don't. I'm going full on entrepreneur, activist/activist now, and that weekend warrior thing is going to become more like a daily warrior thing with respect to competing in races. So, I do have an Ironman coming up in August. I'm going to pick up some more races this year, but right now it's just a transitional stage in my life, so I can't really give you any hard dates at this very moment with respect to my race schedule, but I'll be posting more about that.
And where can people find this information that you're posting?
Absolutely. You can follow me on Instagram. That's Doms Thompson, D-O-M-Z, like zebra, Thompson, one word with a P, S-O-N, and that's my Instagram, or you can go to craziesandweirdos.com, our blog, and you can check out information on that as well. And you can find me there. And the YouTube will be launching this July as well.
And I want to talk about Iron Brocal. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Iron Brocal. We can talk about Brocal and Crazies and Weirdos. So Brocal is a fitness arm of my portfolio. We have working training facilities launching in 2019. The whole concept behind that, because, again, I'm a working professional, and I think it's important. To me, what's inspiring is to see a mom or a dad that works 40 hours a week and get out here and do like a sub-318 marathon. That's inspiring, not these pro athletes that are in some million-dollar facility on a $1 million salary, but somebody that's a working professional kicking ass and just doing it, like not making any excuses. So Brocal is built on that concept, because same thing with me. I if you add the fact that I run a very successful startup company, Crazies and Weirdos, and work full-time as a healthcare executive, I log in minimum 50 plus hours per week, but I'm still able out here to perform on the weekends and do these triathlons, and I'm still able to train and do some incredible things with my body. So Brocal is really built on that, really highlighting that working professional. So whether you're a doctor, lawyer, mom, dad, UPS driver, I don't care, but you are making no excuses. That's what we're about. And we're also going to be introducing technology that's cruelty-free for our shoes, sports stuff, similar to what we do with Crazies and Weirdos, which is my clothing company. You guys probably seen that Eat What Elephants Eat shirt everywhere. That's from us. That's our trademark. That's our copyrighted slogan, Eat What Elephants Eat. So, yeah.
I love your t-shirts. What are some of the other ones? What do they say?
Eat what elephants eat, for the animals, no chill when it comes to animal rights.
That's my favorite. Yeah.
No chill, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all, we're the only vegan company that I'm aware of that's 100% sweatshop free. 80% of our clothes are handmade in New York, and another 20% is produced in other areas. We're coming up with some really cool new technologies. Our shoes and our coats and our eco denim is launching soon. And most of our materials come from recycled and organic goods. So a minimum of 10% is donated to nonprofits fighting for animal rights and stuff like that. So if you guys don't know about Crazies and Weirdos, you should definitely get familiar with it. We're really growing and we're really doing some good stuff for the community.
That is currently up on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. And have I told you yet that I love you? Thank you so much
thank
for
you
what
so
you're
much.
Doing for the movement. That's thank incredible. You. And I know that you often mention inspirational documentaries to educate others about health and animal rights. Can you recommend some of your favorites to our listeners who perhaps have
absolutely.
Not started on this journey yet?
So I'm an ethical guy. I got to put this out there, meaning one of the most inspiring. If you really want to get inspired and really be a do something type of guy or girl. After you watch Earthlings, that would definitely just move energy in your body that you probably never even knew existed. It's a lot of information in there. It's a very emotional documentary, but still, that's always going to be my all-time favorite with respect to the ethics part. A new one that just came out, What the Health, mind-blowing. What the Health is something that you're not going to see any slaughtering happening in that, but that documentary alone, you can sit down with your mom, your dad, or even somebody that is into documentaries or into information and data, has a lot of great data in there that's going to really blow your mind. So those are my two favorites, and those I strongly recommend specifically. But What the Health, in fact, you should do What the Health first and then do Earthlings.
And you can find What the Health at whatthehealthfilm.com, and Earthlings is available for free on YouTube.
It is. Occasionally it gets taken down, but there's another link besides YouTube that says Watch Earthlings for free, which you'll find in your first Google search.
Earthlings is a must view.
Absolutely. It's the vegan maker. It's hard to watch, but I feel that we owe it to the animals if we are contributing to their suffering to witness it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I told myself when I wanted to turn it off multiple times when I watched it. It's 95 minutes of your life to witness the impact we have on their entire lives. So thank you so much, Dom. Is there anything else you want to add before we move on to our next interview?
No, listen, everyone, I'm sure there's a bunch of vegans that's listening, but also there are omnivores listening. And I think I speak to the community about it. I speak all the time about it. But if you need any help with anything, just reach out to me directly. I'm a very pretty down-to-earth guy. Send me a DM, whatever you want to do. I'm here for you. Yep.
You're so sweet. And people can meet you tomorrow.
Let's talk about where you're going to be and when.
This is a big deal. Vancouver, yes. Come and meet Dom.
Please.
Where can they see you? What time?
I'm marching alongside all these wonderful activists that I'm sitting at the radio station with right now. We're going to be, what's the time? I believe 12?
12.
At 12.
12, we're meeting at the Vancouver Art Gallery.
There we go.
Tomorrow, everybody.
For the Vancouver March to close all slaughterhouses.
Yes. We're Dominic Thompson taking over the streets.
Yes. I'm ready to rock and roll with
Bring
you guys
some
tomorrow.
Drums.
Please.
Make some noise.
Let's make some noise.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now we have an interview with Jeff Regeer, who's a former undercover investigator with Mercy for Animals Canada. Welcome, Jeff. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
So that's a really unique, I guess, short-lived career that you had. Can you tell us how you got into that line of work?
Yes. I was a new-ish vegan at the time when I started. I became vegan in 2012, and I started doing undercover investigations in early 2014. And I met the former director of Investigations Canada, and she asked me, and at first I thought, no, there's no way I can do it. I couldn't bear to see what happens to animals on modern farms and slaughterhouses in person. It's hard enough to see it on video. I'm not the guy for it, but she sold me on it. She gave me a spiel about how it's the most impactful thing I could do to make a difference for animals. And after letting the idea bounce around in my head for 2 weeks or so, I thought, yeah, you know what? I think I can do it, and I'm ready. So I reached out to her, and the rest is history.
So what kinds of jobs did you do as an undercover investigator?
Modern farms and slaughterhouses. I worked in dairy farms, egg farms, chicken farms, chicken slaughterhouses. I grew up on a small family farm, so I've seen pretty much everything.
Yeah, and sometimes you and I talk about your upbringing on that small family farm. You were telling me just the other day that you loved the animals so much and seemed to have this disconnect between what was going to be happening to your beloved friends, and you were always encouraging your parents to get more animals, not realizing that just meant more animals being slaughtered, right?
Yeah, as a child, I loved animals. I wanted to be around them as much as possible. And I love them so much, I started volunteering and then working at the zoo. And what I didn't realize then, but what's obvious now, is that my love for animals was very childlike and immature. It was more about me and how I felt around animals and connecting with them rather than what they might want. And yeah, like you said, I remember telling my dad as a kid, like, Dad, we could cram more cows, more pigs, and more sheep into these pens, and wouldn't that be amazing? I could hang out with more animals, not taking into consideration what they might want.
Right. You know, what you just said made me think about The children that visit places like zoos and the Vancouver Aquarium, they're also in that same childlike thinking where they're thinking how great it is for them, but not really yet considering how it is for the animals and is it worth it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So back to the undercover investigations. Earlier, Allison was talking about an undercover investigation that you did, and she didn't know that you did it. And I was kind of sitting here smiling and waiting for you to pipe up and say that you did that one. So let's go back to that.
Yes, Maple Lodge Farms in Ontario.
Which I didn't know you did that. See? I'm just finding out now.
No.
Surprise.
You reported on it.
Surprise.
Okay. Yeah, that's great.
The video speaks for itself. Like, I mean, you see birds coming in with broken bones, sticking out of skin, missing toes. In the winter, they come frozen solid. And as my former coworkers at the slaughterhouse said, frozen like hockey pucks. Or in the summer, it gets so hot, especially at in the inside of the truck, that there just automatically are some percentage of birds that will die of heat exhaustion on the way. It's just part of the industry. It's a it's known collateral damage that just occurs.
And, you know, I noticed in my activism that a lot of people think that this kind of stuff doesn't happen in Canada. And just this morning when I went to meet you all at the Hallmark Chicken Slaughterhouse, I was trying to veganize the cops. Of course. Why not? And he told me he liked dairy. And I said, well, have you seen the YouTube video, Dairy is Scary? And he said, no. And he goes, but that wouldn't be based in Canada. That was the first thing he said. And this is what happens. People don't realize that Canada has terrible transport laws for animals and all kinds of even just general animal welfare laws, right? People don't know this. But you worked just in Canada. You know this.
Yeah. A lot of Canadians like to think that we are further ahead than the U.S. in terms of animal welfare laws, but we're not. But even if the laws were perfect, if that could be possible, just the standard practice of what happens to animals on modern farms, like don't go onto YouTube. You don't need to watch the stuff that I filmed. You don't need to see the egregious, gratuitous abuse of animals. Just the standard practice of what we do to animals. Like, imagine if I were to take a hot knife and burn it into the back of a pig and laugh and think it's funny. Everyone would look at me and say, Jeff, you're a psychopath. What are you doing? But we do that exact same thing to cows, and it's just part of the standard practice. When we brand them, we take hot, red hot iron, scorch it into their skin, and as a society, we accept it because we've been doing it for so long, and because it has a function. The animal's suffering, the consideration into what they might feel isn't taken into consideration. So it's a hiccup. It's a blind spot in our moral view.
I remember as a child asking my dad if that hurt the cows when they branded them. And he said, of course not. They don't feel that. And I believed him. I thought because of their size, that was just like a little fly landing on them. I believed it.
Did you know I have a brand on my leg? And I can tell you it hurts.
Right. We all have a nervous system.
Yeah.
It hurts us all. Well, Jeff, can you give us an example of some of the common misconceptions and against veganism and the best answers that you have for those?
Yeah. I mean, we could talk all day about this.
I know. There's a long list. If anyone out there has ever worked as an animal rights advocate, you are so sick of these common arguments, but let's just hear some of the ones that you hear when you do outreach and how you answer them, because you answer them really well.
Okay, sure. So some people will talk about protein, and maybe just had Dom on the show, and so two quick responses that you can say without having to dig deep into the literature is, I get my protein the same place the gorilla gets the protein, and they are not lacking. Or I get my protein from the same place your protein gets their protein.
That makes them think.
Yeah, we eat cows, and cows and rhinos and all these herbivorous animals, they are the most muscular animals on the planet. The lean ones, the cats, the carnivores, those are the less muscular. And so there's loads of protein in plants. If you're eating whole plants, you cannot be. It's impossible to become deficient in protein unless you're just not eating. Mm-hmm. And some, like, somewhat related to that is like just a general health argument. Well, I can't be healthy. Well, statistically, without digging into the literature and the peer-reviewed scientific studies, you can just point out the fact that vegans and vegetarians, statistically across the board, live longer, have lower rates of a multitude of diseases and conditions that plague the omnivorous population. And so, why would that be?
Mm-hmm. And why would you not choose that lifestyle, knowing that we're all concerned about health? And this makes me think about one of my favorite YouTube videos that I often send to people. It's Dr. Michael Greger, and he is a vegan medical doctor who puts a lot of his energy into studying health and nutrition. And his YouTube speech that I love is called "The Leading Causes of Death and a Vegan Diet." And he goes through the 14 leading causes of death and talks about how a vegan diet can either prevent or reverse those conditions. It's really powerful.
And read his book, How Not to Die, if you want a big volume of information that details all of these studies that he has gone through and to collate into the chapters of the top leading causes of death.
And if you're not one for reading, because I think we're all so distracted these days, we're better off with YouTube videos. I do love his website, nutritionfacts.org, where he has quick little videos on any topic at all. You can just put it in the search bar, inflammation, arthritis, whatever, and something will pop up. Yeah. So, Jeff, you know, speaking of YouTube videos and documentaries and websites, what would you recommend for people who are interested in going vegan that you often suggest when you're doing outreach?
There's lots of videos. I would echo what Dominic said. Earthlings is the number one. I give that film credit for making me make the jump from vegetarian to vegan. What the Health, Forks Over Knives, If You Care About the Environment, Cowspiracy. I'd say those are the top ones in my book at the moment. And then there's always new ones coming out. So I'm really excited about the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a common misconception that vegans cannot obtain all their required nutrients through a vegan diet. And again, we're on the radio, so people can't see you or Dom, but you're both very fit, muscular men. And I've known you closely for 3 years, and I cannot say that I remember you being sick at all in that time, apart from illness from inhaling toxic fumes from factory farms when your lungs were killing you. But can you tell us how you stay so healthy? What do you typically eat, and what supplements do you take, if any?
I don't like salad so much, and that's what people think vegans eat.
It's true.
Smoothies in the morning are just awesome. And you can throw kale in a fruit smoothie and you have no idea you're eating such a healthy food, other than the fact that you put it in the blender, but it doesn't taste like it, and you're just fueling your system loaded with antioxidants, and you're like, you can throw like a couple of bananas, a couple of carrots, a handful of kale, like a quarter cup of ground flaxseed, and more omega-3 fatty acids than fish, and you're not getting any of the saturated fat, none of the cholesterol,
or the toxins from the ocean.
Yeah, none of the built-up metals that have built up in the bodies of animals that we consume when we eat them. You're not getting any of that. So smoothies are huge, and I also love I love pasta and bean and rice and bean burritos with guacamole, and there's so many awesome foods that are just so filling, and it's never been a better time to be a vegan.
And there's a lot of new vegan restaurants in Vancouver, and I'm happy to see a lot of the time lineups out the door. It's great. It's really changing. Well, let's talk a little bit about what people are concerned about missing out on by switching to a vegan diet. And I'm just going to admit right now that I was one of these people 3 years ago. So the top nutrients that I hear about are iron, B12, calcium, and of course the protein one, which we've, I think, beaten to death today. So let's talk about iron. Most people think that meat and eggs are the only source for iron. And in fact, iron is in dark leafy greens. And as Jeff suggested, just throw some kale in your smoothie, pumpkin seed butter, sweet potatoes, tomatoes, oatmeal, tofu, edamame, beans, and lentils. And these are all really healthy foods on top of, you know, having the iron that we need. They've also got a lot of nutrients. and B12. So this is an interesting one that will surprise most people. And I like the B12 story because it was so shocking to me. So animals are actually getting their B12 from the soil. It's in the plants that they eat. So we're getting it very indirectly. And this blew my mind when I learned about this. I had no idea. So B12 is a vitamin which people associate with animal products. The fact is that bacteria produce B12. As such, it becomes a simple question of, are you going to get B12 from the bacteria in isolation, or are you going to exploit and kill billions of animals just to get B12 from the bacteria in their bodies? In addition, a B12 supplement is injected into livestock to keep their levels up due to topsoil being too intensively used and lacking in certain nutrients. So the choice becomes even more absurd. Either take a B12 supplement, which I think we all do, or give an animal a B12 supplement and then kill them. Doesn't that just seem so silly? But this isn't widely known, is it? And I didn't even learn this until maybe a year after I went vegan. So, okay, what else do we want to talk about? Let's talk about calcium. What do most people think of when we say calcium right away? Dairy, right?
Milk.
Yep, and I did too. And I had to have a glass of milk for every meal when I was a kid. Mandatory.
Cow's milk, right?
Yeah, cow's milk. So there's more calcium in plants and nuts without the harmful effects of dairy, such as inflammation. And I think people are starting to wake up to the fact that dairy is really harmful, but not quickly enough for my liking, unfortunately. Vegan foods that are high in calcium are dark leafy greens, soybeans, orange juice, and fortified foods such as cereal or plant-based milk. And there's probably about 14 different kinds of plant-based milks out there right now, and they're great. Like, I really like them. And I think we all choose them. I choose coconut milk usually. I had that in my coffee today. You wouldn't know the difference. And omega-3 fatty acids. So the health benefits that are believed to be associated with omega-3 fatty acid intake includes decreased inflammation, help for arthritis, and reduced symptoms of depression. Omega-3 may even boost health and intelligence of unborn babies. In fish significantly decreases IQ. While often a recommended source of omega-3 fish and fish oil supplements may not be harmless due to the presence of dioxins, PCBs, mercury, and other industrial pollutants. These pollutants in fish may increase our risk of type 2 diabetes and cardiac death. Other animal products, such as chicken, are no longer bountiful sources of omega-3 due to genetic manipulation. Omega-3 enriched eggs can be a source, but eggs contain cholesterol and acid. And did you know that eggs cannot be called a health food legally, because they're so high in cholesterol? Yet all the health nuts that I know that aren't vegan, eggs is in there daily. Mm-hmm. They eat it every single day. So other sources that you can get your omega-3 from is, like Jeff said, flax seeds, and you need to grind those up. And you can just easily put those in your smoothie or sprinkle them on a salad or even put them in a burrito, right? So let's talk a little bit more about your investigations, Jeff. So in the news lately, I'm not sure if our listeners are aware, but this has been in the news quite a bit, the Chilliwack Dairy investigation. And you did that.
Yes, that
you
is correct.
You are a hero. This is a landmark case as far as animal cruelty charges go. So you have the stats on those, right?
Yeah, I can tell you what's happened so far. The owners of the farm were charged the maximum fine, which was $345,000. And as far as I know, that's never happened before. Mm-hmm. The first three workers who pled guilty are all facing jail time. Two of them are facing 60 days in prison, and the other one is a week in prison. And the remaining workers who are being charged, I think the sentencing is still pending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just canceled a day in court yesterday, so that will still be happening in the future. And why don't you tell us a little bit about working on a dairy farm? Because a lot of people think that going vegetarian is enough, thinking that there's no cruelty if cows are already producing milk and chickens are already laying eggs.
Yeah, let me tell you, when I tell people about what I documented and what I witnessed on the dairy farm, it's comforting to think that, well, that's the exception. I remember reading a news headline like a couple years ago when the investigation broke, and it said Canada's most notorious dairy. It's like, well, this is the only dairy in Canada that has ever been investigated that I'm aware of, and all of a sudden it's the most notorious one. It's maybe the most technologically advanced dairy. But I prefer to not even to get into the egregious violence that the cows were subjected to, because the standard practice itself is as bad or worse than the egregious violence. we take these we impregnate these mother cows, forcibly impregnate them. They go through 9 months of gestation, give birth to the calf, love the calves. They're very maternal beings, just like humans are. And then we take their babies away, and they grieve for their babies. And we do this over and over again. The male calves will never produce milk, so the male calves will become veal. They're slaughtered as calves, and that's why we have veal. It's a byproduct of the dairy industry. There's a little bit of veal in every glass of milk.
And many people say, I drink milk, but I would never buy veal. I've heard that so many times.
Yeah, if you're buying dairy products, you are paying for veal. It's as simple as that.
And when do they take the male calves away from the mother?
Within hours, usually. Mm-hmm. Maybe a day. Within 24 hours.
And then where do they go?
Then they go, if they're female, they'll be fed like they'll be formula fed, and they'll replace their mothers when their mothers die. And if they're male, they go to a veal farm. But for the mothers, as bad as it is to be a male dairy cow, I would say it's probably worse to be a female dairy cow, because the mothers, as I said, forcibly impregnated, have their babies taken away, and their bodies pay just an immense toll just for this intense milk production. A dairy cow will live about 20 years, left to her own devices, But we've genetically selected these cows, so they produce massive amounts of milk, and it takes its toll on their bodies. Dairy cows will only live 4, 5, or 6 years, and then they collapse. Because their bodies are just worn out from such intense milk production. Like, there's videos online, like the stuff that I filmed of people at the Chilliwack dairy. They would take chains, put them around the cows' necks, and lift them up by the tractor bucket. And the reason they're doing that is because those cows have collapsed under their own weight in the milking parlor. They cannot stand up. They're so weak and worn out from such intense milk production. Mm-hmm. And that was how they were actually doing their job. They were doing their job correctly as they were instructed to on the dairy farm. And so dairy is just inherently cruel. Without the gratuitous beating and breaking cows' tails, forget all that. It's just like the most family-friendly farm, the most humane-stamped product. It's inherently cruel.
Right, because they still have to repeatedly impregnate the mother and take away the babies, even if it is some small time farm, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And you know, I've been sitting here having those images of the videos that you made going through my head as you're talking to me, and I was one of those people that thought there's no harm in dairy and eggs, and what you said is true, that it is worse to be a mother dairy cow than anything else, really. You live longer, you're exploited longer, every day is enslavement and torture, and there's no love.
Yeah, and they end up in the slaughterhouse just like everybody else. Yeah. It's just they were tormented for 4, 5, or 6 years first. If you ever wonder where ground beef comes from, those are spent dairy cows. Steak comes from a beef cow. Ground beef comes from a spent dairy cow that is just completely worn out by the dairy industry.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone have any questions for Jeff? It's pretty rare that we have an undercover investigator on the show. I've asked him lots of questions.
I have a question. Jeff, you're talking about gratuitous beating of cows. Can you talk about the mentality of the slaughterhouse workers and why that kind of activity occurs? Because you were in it. So why is there gratuitous violence that does not need to be done to these animals?
It's the culture of within the modern farming industry. And what I think a lot of people miss, what I think a lot of people don't understand, and what I didn't understand before I did undercover investigations, was that when you work in that environment, you get desensitized really, really quickly. For me, like, I went into those jobs with a strong ethical stance, and I lost my sensitivity. I stopped at the beginning of a job, like at the Maple Lodge Farms where I was hanging chickens, And in my head, I used to apologize to each chicken and feel bad. But after 2 weeks, it just stopped. And you go in autopilot and you're just trying to get to the end of your shift.
So that's the human psyche is what you're saying. We're weak and we break down. I think that's actually a stress defense mechanism.
You would need that for a job like you did, for sure.
I think, and I also think that the rate of employment, there's a lot of turnover, right, in the slaughterhouse. Is that correct? Is that what you saw?
Yeah, really high turnover rate. There'll be new employees who come, and then the first coffee break will come, and then you won't see those employees again because they take off and they don't come back.
Because they couldn't make it.
Yeah, it's so awful. And even, like, I remember talking to employees, obviously non-vegan, just regular people working in the slaughterhouse, and they told me they stopped eating chicken when they started working there. But after, just like me, after a few weeks, you lose that sensitivity. And so it's, I understand how somebody can do horrible things. If you see animals' throats being slit open in countless numbers, it's a self-preservation mechanism. You can't feel that empathy for so long. Your psyche just can't sustain that, and so it shuts down and you lose that empathy.
Well, I'm curious to know, now you're retired as an undercover investigator and you're very public, so clearly you can't do that again, but since you've retired, you do full-time animal rights activism. I'm so proud to know you, and thank you so much for all that you do. You're the most dedicated person I think I know. Every single day you're out there doing something and even risking getting in a bit of trouble with the police and bylaw officers. So tell me, what is your plan for the future, career-wise and activism-wise?
For sure it's going to be some form of activism. Right now I have the awesome opportunity to help organize the March to Close All Slaughterhouses. But, and a little plug, that is the best event of the year. So come out tomorrow.
You'll meet Jeff and Dom and Megan. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will talk to you all day if you want.
Do you have a turn at the microphone? Are you giving a speech?
Yeah, I'll give a speech.
And chanting.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I think will be the most consistent project throughout my life is a project called TV Outreach for Animals. And that's where I bring a portable TV into public spaces, busy transit stops, and screen modern farm and slaughterhouse footage and spread awareness about what's happening behind closed doors of modern farms and slaughterhouses, and spreading awareness because the public has the right to know.
Yeah, let's just briefly, we've got a few more minutes left. I want to hear some of your success stories when you do that.
Probably my favorite is a friend of mine, Chris Cruz. You had him on the show a while back.
He did.
And he is one of my best converts. Not only did he go vegan, he joins me probably more than anybody else. And he's good. He's really good at talking to people and a real cool, down-to-earth guy.
Awesome. And he's not the only one you've converted. I mean, I've seen pictures that you've posted on your Facebook page, TV Outreach for Animals, of people that decided on the spot that they were going to go vegan after watching some of that footage. And they cry, don't they?
Yeah, you get surprised. People are empathetic. And I mean, I'm competing with the animal rights community is competing with a multi-billion-dollar industry in spreading the truth. Like, cows aren't laughing. Like, you have laughing cow cheese. Cows aren't laughing on the farms. It's difficult to compete with a multi-billion-dollar industry that is getting subsidies from the government to market these products that are inherently cruel.
Yeah. Well, everybody, thank you so much for being here today. And our listeners out there, I really hope that you take part in the March to Close All Slaughterhouses. We're meeting at noon at the Vancouver Art Gallery. This is going to be really powerful. Marches historically have been very powerful. And the more we get, the more of a message it sends that we need to really shake people up.
And come to our film screening tonight.
Oh, yes. Vancouver, talk about this.
Vancouver Chicken Save. That's Megan and Animal Voices. We are co-presenting a film screening tonight. It's a film called Call to Rescue, Redefining Our Barnyard Story. And it's a beautiful and inspiring glimpse into the unbridled compassion on 15 farmed animal sanctuaries throughout the U.S. The rescued farmed animals simply are who they are at these at these sanctuaries. They are changing lives, lifestyles, and beliefs on both sides of the fence, and the humans, many of whom dramatically altered the course of their lives because of a connection with a farm animal, are dedicated beyond words. So this film screening is free. It's happening tonight. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. in room 1800, the Terrison Room at SFU Harbor Center in downtown Vancouver. It's tonight, and the screening will start at 6 p.m. We hope to see you there.
Are we all going to be there?
Yeah.
I am.
I think. Yeah. I think
everyone's going to be there.
Everyone's going to be there. So arrive there at 5:30. So thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. You've been listening to 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show, June the 16th. We'll be presenting a show with Mexican animal rights activist Marco Antonio Regil. He is a television host, and he'll be speaking about issues in Mexico. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Go to animalvoices.org to listen to our latest podcasts, and you can also check us out on Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver, and subscribe to us via iTunes to keep in touch with our show. So we're closing the show now with a song
and
called...
We're
closing the show now with a song called Truth. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Trick me into doing battle, calling out fake up, wanna get me rattled, wanna pull me back behind the fence with the cat, building your lenses, digging your trenches, put me on the front line, leave me with a dumb mind with no defenses, but your defenses, if you can't stand to feel the pain, then you are senseless, senseless, I've grown up some different kind of fighter, and when the darkness comes, let it inside you, your darkness is shining.